All right, we're going to take your phone calls, and I tell you what, we've got Stan Dale, Jim Berkland, James McCanney. We'll sprinkle around the questions. If you want to speak specifically with one of them, when I go to you, just simply say who that is. So we'll be back with you and them in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie with Stan Dale, Jim Berkland, and, of course, physicist James McCanney. Stan, back to you for just a moment. Are you seeing anything specifically, just a review, that could give us some cause of alarm, at least in this country?
Not immediately, but certainly the West Coast from the Baja all the way up to Vancouver has been showing a number of seismic signals for the last, since the 1st of August when I put out that red alert.
Right.
I don't see anything today, and understand that normally I only get information that would give me a lead time of a maximum of 5 days. Sometimes it's only 12 to 15 hours, and it happens while I'm doing the map. But I would say that with all of the reports of bad smells that came from several hundred miles up the coast, the West Coast, recently, and they wrote it off to bad sewer lines or something, in several cities all on the same day, and also in the middle of the United States, the New Madrid fault line smelling the bad odors, and over in Virginia and North Carolina smelling the bad odors, all within 2 or 3 days of each other. I would say that these are results of probably magma movement up close to the surface, producing these hydrogen sulfide or some kind of a gas with a sulfur base to it, so that it could be passed off as sewer gas. And that's a concern. That would indicate to me, from the little bitty series or flurries of earthquakes we've had, the clusters on the West Coast and in inland up in through Utah and up through Idaho and then over back into Washington State, that we're seeing a massive movement of the western chunk of the United States that has fault lines there. I don't like to see that, especially when the gases are being released like that.
Right.
So the next thing I would probably look for is either earthquake or volcano activity, probably in California.
Just what we need, Stan, huh?
Well, what about the Oregon Bulge, where that huge area has fault stuff in?
Yes.
You know, that might be connected to all this.
Jim Berkland, you've been looking at that, haven't you?
Yes. And certainly when you get massive swelling of the crust, you have to suspect something's going on down below. And I recall the famous Palmdale Bulge back about 79, 1980. In fact, as county geologist for Santa Clara County, I was receiving official messages from the Office of Emergency Services pointing out that the bulge was centered on the San Andreas Fault. And then we had a series of 5-magnitude quakes over by Landers. This is in right after the eclipse on March the 13th of 1980. And then the bulge decreased. And at that point, they said, you know, maybe that's not good, because the bulge was essentially compression across the San Andreas and was kind of holding it together. And then when the bulge decreased, then there was no pinning it in place anymore. But we certainly had a lot of bulging up at Mount St. Helens. Remember, it was bulging towards the north and becoming very unstable.
Sure.
And that was going on, I mean, feet a day that was occurring. Up at the Three Sisters in Oregon, the other volcanic area, I think the total is only a few feet, maybe less than 10 feet of amplitude on that bulge. That's enough to get your thoughts, trigger some thoughts.
It's almost like you want to get your best bottle of wine, sit back, and just let it all rip, you know what?
Yeah. It'd be nice to be safely up in a space shuttle or something looking down at it.
I'm not even sure that's safe anymore.
No, true.
Let's go to the phones. First-time caller line, you're on the air. Hi there.
Hi. Hey, George. How's it going?
Good. Go ahead, sir.
My name is Adam, and I'm from Madera, California, and I also have a question for Mr. Dale.
All right.
First off, are you the person who wrote that book, The Cosmic Conspiracy?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
He's the one and only.
All right. And I was wondering, do you think the Nibiru could be a part of the reason why we're having all these weird changes in the solar system?
Well, I don't know whether it be, Nibiru or not. I'm familiar with discussions, and I don't know why we couldn't detect it with even amateur telescopes if it's that close, but maybe it doesn't have a reflectivity index that will allow that. I just have to claim I don't know.
Okay, and it may not be that planet, but James McCanny, it could be something else out there.
Well, there are hundreds, possibly thousands of major objects floating around that we have not detected yet. And we've certainly seen new objects discovered recently, some even Mars-sized planets out there, or at least Pluto-sized. So the possibility that there's many large objects out there floating around and affecting electrically the solar system, in other words, discharging that big cloud of ions that sits out far beyond Pluto, and then discharging it back into the inner solar system to the sun, that's a very direct possibility. And, of course, Stan was talking about how things out there can affect us in here, even though it seems like a long ways away. Those relationships are definitely there. So Nibiru is an object of historical repute. And I've always said this, if we ever see something coming in, how are you going to know that that's Nibiru?
you won't.
Yeah. I mean, we don't have enough information historically to identify it. But the point is that there are so many objects out there that if something comes in big, well, we're going to know about it. The solar system's going to know about it. And but there are many. Let's put it that way.
West of the Rockies, it's your turn. You're on the air with us. Hello.
Hello, gentlemen. My name is Veronica. I'm in Rockland, California. And I wanted to ask all of you, in your studies that you go through, have you ever related anything parallel in your studies and your findings to revelations in the Bible? For example, you're talking about things heating up and people going underground, things are going to be burning up. They mentioned in the Bible something about all the grasses would be burned and a third of the trees would be burned and the people would be scorched.
Anybody want that?
Well, the historical record, that's one thing I study, and I've learned a lot by studying this historical record. In fact, I wanted to comment about the show with Linda Moulton Howell coming up about the snakes.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about electrical activity in the solar system increasing and the sun increasing in general. And remember when you were a kid and you wanted worms for fishing and you'd go out with a 12-volt battery and take two wires and plug them into the ground and all the worms would come up?
That's what my dad told me. He did in Iowa, and that helped to explain why worms would crawl to the surface before earthquakes.
Oh, yeah, exactly. That's a great example. And in the historically, we have the plagues of Egypt, and, of course, the vermin or whatever you want to call them are coming out of the ground, and there's a lot of stuff living in the ground that we don't see every day, thank goodness.
Time after time, you hear about rats and mice running around in broad daylight, and that's usually within a few hours of a significant quake.
Right. So I think that's very interesting that you're having that show tomorrow night. But definitely, you can learn a lot from history. I've learned a lot of weather, a lot of my weather work. I've learned a lot from understanding the tremendous weather conditions of old, talked about in the ancient texts, the Colburn and the Mayan, the Hopi, you go the Old Testament, etc. So there's a tremendous amount of that information that's valid and a lot of times ignored because people just thought that those were fairy tales.
Yes. Well, I went to Peru to see a total eclipse of the sun about 94. And after seeing this great eclipse, we got into the sacred valley of Incas in the bus. And the Peruvian guide said, "I'm so glad you were all able to see our eclipse. We in Peru have a tradition. We watch the eclipse, and then we wait for the earthquake." And I said, "Would you say that again for my video camera?" It totally caught me by surprise. They've known it for hundreds of years. And the next day, Peru shook with a 6.2. And in the Bible, speaking of that, in the book of Matthew, you will find when Christ is on the cross, the sky darkens in the afternoon.
Right.
And then the ground shakes with a mighty earthquake. And strange things happen. The Roman soldier says, truly, you must be the Son of God. And then 3 days later, an aftershock rolls the stone away. Now, that's in the right order. Eclipse, quake, aftershock.
Wildcard line, your turn. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi, this is my name is Vincent, and I have a question for the distinguished panel here.
Okay, Vincent.
George. My question is regarding regarding the Earth's weather patterns, the radical weather patterns that we're weather patterns that we're having. Do you feel that the U.S. military has achieved the ability or technology to manipulate the electromagnetic properties as relating to weather?
That's yours, James.
Well, absolutely. And let me quick explain how HARP works, and then I'll go into the latest technology, which is satellite laser, which they shine down from above. They can ionize a path, and that induces an electrical current from the ionosphere down to Earth. And so that's, in fact, how they're controlling Wilma right now and some of these past storms. The HARP, however, a little bit older technology, they could beam essentially like radio waves, bounce it off the ionosphere, and these could bounce around the Earth, and they could send a radio wave off in this direction and that direction, and then they would converge on an area, say France, for example, or Russia or whatever, or even here. And when those radio waves converge, they alter the atmospheric conditions and therefore trigger energy sources that alter the weather. So absolutely, there's no question that this is this technology exists. It has gone kind of black ops. It's not in your standard within, say, NOAA or one of the standard agencies that gives us our weather, the National Weather Service, etc. But there's no question that these exist, and they've been researching these for decades, and they would be foolish not to, given that they're the Department of Defense. They have to know about this stuff.
Well, let me add a phenomenon that I observed about 3 years ago here in the Valley of the Moon. We had the sky full of chemtrails, including where they merge together and they make an occluded area. It looks like high, thin cirrus. But all of a sudden I looked up and there was a perfect circular hole in this cloud bank, this thin cloud bank, and down the middle of the hole was a little vortex.
Mm-hmm.
And one chemtrail led right up to the hole and ended right there. They turned off the thing. And it appeared that something had punched down from above. And you were talking about laser beam?
Right.
And then I saw the exact same thing on the internet site. Somebody showed a similar thing over Florida. Now, these are not natural meteorological phenomena.
Right. Yeah, I've got a little video clip of last January when I was able to get out over the Pacific and actually directly measure the ion stream induced by the laser beam as they excited some storms out there. So I know this is going on.
Okay, let's go to our next wild card line. It's your turn. Hi there.
Hi. How you all doing? This is Bob Lovell from Hinesville, Maryland.
Hi, Bob.
Stan Dale, I don't know if you remember me. I used to call you from time to time when living in Perth. You may still live there for all I know.
No, I'm in Colorado now, Bob. What's your last name?
Lovell.
Ah, yes, Bob. Yes.
Yeah, because you at one time you sent me a box of some of your tapes, and then you asked me if I'd send them to a friend of somebody you knew in Nashville. And
all right.
He's supposed to have sent them back to you. I kept the box, by the way.
Anyway.
And I told you that about a dream I'd had about somebody named Adelaide, and you said, was she a little old lady from Adelaide, Australia? And I said, no, she was actually a young lady from Brentwood, and she lived about five blocks from where the house that, exists, where the exorcist was actually. That's a whole separate story, that part.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's a Friday nighter.
Yeah. Yeah, but you do remember me then.
Yes, I do.
Okay, well, it's good to hear your voice. You haven't aged a bit. And you know, you're not on a three-second delay. But
no,
I just wanted to ask, there's so many things in that. It's about your cosmic conspiracy book, too. There's so many things in there, like you mentioned about weather warfare and that, like you said, subliminal educational processes in regards to UFO technology. You were doing studies on geographic processes then, though. I think you were using a different method. And I just wanted to know in relation to that, there was a couple other things I was thinking of, but they popped out of my mind because I'm trying to, you know, not take up a lot of time. But is there anything in regards from that book that you would want to add to the conversation, or maybe the other gentleman too?
Well, actually, I was going to a while ago, but the sound went out and I couldn't hear the other two guys, and I was afraid to overtalk them. But the book does cover my position on that, which is a biblically based one. And I am certain that we are living in the days of the prophecies of the book of the Revelation and of Daniel and of Matthew. I am aware that these things will precede the return of the Messiah, as the Bible says. I believe that. In fact,
I think he said that's what part of your conversation was all about, the end times, when he first talked to you.
Oh, okay, yeah. And, sorry, I just couldn't quite hear you, Bob. That's what started me studying earthquakes, was biblical prophecy and a book by Hal Lindsey. And when I found the correlations between the Navy data and earthquakes, I stuck to that because it would help me to tell people where we are in that timeline eventually. And I think we're very close to seeing the period spoken of as the Great Tribulation. So there's an awful lot of things starting to fit with prophecy just exactly now.
When all of you get some time, go up to Hoagland's website, enterprisemission.com, under his blog. Take a look at his, and I'd be curious at another date to get your reaction to the way he's comparing Hurricane Ophelia with Wilma. And he's got some graphics in there, too. So if you ever get a moment, get up there and take a look at that. Stan, what's on your plate in the future? What are you up to? Hello, Stan? Where is Stan?
Well, let me fill in my future. This is Jim. The book about me is coming out here in about a month, called The Man Who Predicts Earthquakes, Jim Berkland, Maverick Geologist, by Cal Ori. And she's written quite a bit about animals and earthquakes, and this really tells the complete story. And finally getting my licks in after taking a lot of heat from many of my
colleagues. And you have. Stan, again, what's on your plate in the future?
Okay.
Stan?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can.
Okay, sorry. Ask your question again.
What are you up to in the future? What's up for you?
Future-wise, I'm continuing the studies of the earthquake phenomenon and trying to be able to warn people on the West Coast and in the New Madrid fault zone, which I think is just as dangerous, if not more so, than the West Coast problem. Every day I do that. It probably takes an hour or two for me to prepare the report. But I guess I'm being kind of a watchman of the earthquake phenomenon and things that are related to it. In addition to that, we're working here at the house, getting our own provisions and emergency.
Getting ready just in case.
Well, look, you know, I'm not ashamed to admit that. I believe from the data I've seen that we're in for some hard times across the country, in fact, across the world. And we encourage everyone to prepare and not be those guys that wait till 2 days before the hurricane comes and go storm the stores for gallon jugs of water and stuff they could have stored for free.
Then it'll be too late. We'll be back in a moment with James McKinney, Stan Dale, Jim Berkland, and the rest of your phone calls. I'm George Norrie. This is Coast to Coast AM. And, of course, we're going to take final phone calls. Stan Dale, James McKinney, Jim Berkland, all their websites are linked up at coasttocoastam.com. They're there. Go into them. Take a look at some of the different things they do. All their work is pretty intensive and pretty remarkable material. So go take a look at it. James McKinney, Jim Berkland, Stan Dale. And we'll be back with your final phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. And Professor McKinney, we didn't get to you about what you're doing in the future. What's up with you?
Well, a couple things. I'm very involved in alternative energy, and I've made a commitment myself to specifically wind energy. I feel it's the most promising of the energy alternative energy fields. And my Tesla tower work is proceeding. I'm in the environmental impact stage of that, and that is quite a healthy problem. What to do with this energy and how to control the environment when you're doing this? So that's progressing. And then lastly, I'm developing or have developed a course, a whole in basically university coursework of my work on CDs in a lecture series, and that's for people who've read my books and want to go to the next step.
Well, I got to tell you, this Tesla tower, if you pull this thing off, James, you might have one heck of a piece of machinery. Free electricity for all of us?
Well, yeah, and it's amazing. It's available. The trick is not to mess up on the first time out of the box, and that's the difficult part, because you want to bet there's going to be a lot of people pointing fingers.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's go to the phones. Let's pick it up by going to our East of the Rockies line. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Hi.
Hey, I don't think I'm the only person who has this viewpoint, but it's my opinion that these earthquakes around the world could very well be caused by subterranean disruptions caused by the oil being pumped out by all the ruler. What do you think about that?
Who wants that one?
Well, I could say that
Jim Berkeley.
It has happened, like at Long Beach. The coast sunk about 10 feet there in the 20s and 30s when they were really pumping like mad. And then in 33, they had the big Long Beach earthquake that most people don't know. But a government commission said had schools been in full session that day and the quake had not occurred about 5:45 at night, they would have lost between 10,000 and 30,000 school kids. That's why they adopted the Field Act. But in other places, in Denver in the 1960s, they were pumping in chemical warfare waste into deep holes, and they're 12,000-foot deep holes, and all of a sudden they begin to shake with a series of earthquakes, and one lone voice, David Evans, an engineering geologist, said, I think those military fellows pumping all that oil in there is a part of the cause of getting hundreds of earthquakes in Denver when we never felt one before. They had a couple that were over 5 magnitude. Of course, the government said, that's ridiculous. It's like saying we could raise the Rockies with an eyedropper, just adding a little water to the ground. Well, then they had to shut the pumps down, and the earthquake stopped. And when they started the pumps again after maintenance, the earthquakes began again. And then the experts said, oh, we thought so all the time. So, yes, there is an effect of changing fluid pressure at depth.
You know, Jim, we were talking last week about peak oil. And I am not a believer that this planet's running out of oil. I wish we would use an alternative fuel. But I think, I truly believe this planet, when it was formed, had these hydrocarbons within the planet, and that it's everywhere. I don't believe dead dinosaurs in plant life is making as much oil as
well,
they say.
Not the dinosaurs, but, you know, there are so many parts of the Earth that have no oil, like Scandinavia and the middle of Australia. So it really is related to biology, almost all of our oil supplies, but there is so much more that we haven't even tested yet, and it's mostly under control, and I agree that we're not seeing the truth come out on our supplies of oil.
Okay, let's go back to the phones. We'll pick it up by going to our first-time caller line. You're on the air with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there. Hello, first-time caller line. Free that up. Okay, west of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi there.
Hi. My name's Bernie. I'm calling from Portland, Oregon.
Hi, Bernie.
Good morning. Comment and a question. My comment is, in college, I studied a lot of ecology courses, and just I don't think people really, you know, realize just a small change and, you know, such a balance in the earth that, you know, if we were closer to the sun, we'd be burned up, and if we were a little further away, we'd freeze. You know, 5-degree change in water temperature can destroy a whole coral reef. And I just, you know, just little changes like that, people just don't realize. Just there's the what's the saying that if you have a little you can blow a little breath on this side of the world and cause a hurricane on the other. My question is, do all the gentlemen think that possibly the increase in all the electromagnetic communication in the world is changing things at all?
Who wants that?
You mean the electromagnetic waves transmitting telecommunications around the world?
Yes, all the cell phones and there's just so much of that.
Well, I don't think we know very much about it. I think EMF, research. There might be some people that know about it, but it's not something that's publicly, made public.
Well, the Swedes won't let schoolhouses be near over 2.5 milligauss because of cancer considerations.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's pretty good on their part. Mm-hmm. We should be doing that.
I agree.
Yeah,
those are effects on nearby masses, people in particular. But I think when you start talking about global effects, I don't know that the energy that we're transmitting across the planet would be enough to be a major effect. Do you, James?
I don't. It's really hard to say because we have. What I wonder about is those very subtle things, those six senses of the human being, those electromagnetic connections to our universe that are so subtle that all the noise in the background could be disrupting and possibly causing a chaotic effect as opposed to harmonious, as the ancients used to talk about being associated with the earth. And I believe that's electromagnetic in some fashion. So, I don't know. My jury is still out on that one. I can't say one way or the other, but I think it's a good question and something we really have to be tuned to, because like any kind of pollution, it is a alteration of our environment.
Right.
I heard, Jim, they might have had a 3.2 near San Diego just minutes ago.
Yeah.
Did they?
Uh-huh. And they also had, this is just an aftershock of the 4.9 we had, but it just had one in South Dakota also, a 3.1 in South Dakota. Unusual.
Can this planet take another earthquake that we had that created the tsunami that lifted the ocean floor? That's pretty devastating.
Yeah, well, it's one of the largest earthquakes in history. I guess perhaps the Alaskan quake in 64 matched it. But interesting that both of those quakes, the Sumatra quake and the Alaskan 64 quake, were on the day of the full moon. And it's pretty hard to ignore that.
That's good.
I don't think, George, to answer your question, I don't think that large earthquake like that would, destroy the Earth. Certainly I think it might hurt a lot of systems and people.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we will go beyond that simply because, the magnitude of it is fairly local, even if it just changes gravity just a little bit. I mean, it's really not that big a deal on a planetary scale.
Right. The actual, what I was talking before about the GPS satellites, they're extremely sensitive, and the actual change in the gravitational field and et cetera is small, but it's measurable. I mean, astronomers and geologists can measure extremely minute changes today with the equipment they have. So it's not something we would notice necessarily, but certainly if you're in one of the quake areas like Pakistan recently, that's just absolutely devastating to those local populations.
80,000 dead now, they say.
Yeah, and, I even wonder about that with 3 million homeless. It seems like possibly even a number shy of the reality.
Absolutely. East of the Rockies, welcome to the show. Hi there.
Hi.
Yeah, go ahead, sir.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. Hi, George. Gary in San Antonio.
Hi, Gary. Go ahead.
WAI, and my question is for Stan Dale.
Go ahead, Gary.
It's a pleasure to speak with you, sir. I've been buying copies of your book, The Cosmic Conspiracy, and giving it to family and friends for 20 years or so. Great book. My understanding is that you believe the extraterrestrial phenomenon is in reality just a man-made phenomenon. If I'm correct, that's what I think you understand the case to be.
Yeah.
I've heard reports from several quarters of people breaking free from whatever this visitations are and the accompanying mind oppression after going through formal Christian deliverance services, renouncing involvement in the occult by them and other family members.
Right.
So my question to you is, do you allow for the interaction of wicked spirits, fallen angels, working in conjunction with whatever group of people is bringing about this plan for a global one-world government? Or do you think it's strictly man-made mind control? Thanks.
Well, Gary, I don't think it's strictly man-made. As I was in the project with Dr. Teller and Sir John Williams and a few other people that were developing flying saucer technologies back in the late 60s and into the 70s, I know that group itself, I left them in 74, but in the late 70s, there was a more powerful group, these quote-unquote aliens, which were probably just the beings the Bible spoke of as the fallen angels in the ancient days. That group has apparently taken over a lot of the Earth-made infrastructure to build technology for their own purposes. And I think the time is very close that this is going to be made public. I know it sounds like science fiction to talk about, you know, flying saucers for real and us having out of gravity, but having worked in the project, I can tell you we do, for what it's worth. And that we have lost control of a lot of the technology that we developed once these beings got the infrastructure they needed here on the surface of the Earth and underground.
So, if I'm understanding you correctly, you say there are other beings involved other than people, which would lead to my follow-up question. People like John Lear, which I know you're familiar with that, who that is, yeah. And others, these people who came to be contactees, that whatever this is, these creatures are, whatever they are, claiming that they, not God, created us, and that they created Jesus Christ, which is a obvious contradiction to what the Bible declares. Why would anything travel across the universe just to say Jesus Christ is not who he claims to be? That, to me, rings the bell of the demonic.
Well, I guess it does, for sure, with me as well, but they're not traveling across the universe as much as they are in nearby space. From what I've studied in the ancient Hebrew writings and some of Einstein's postulations, we have concentric levels to our universes. And right around Earth, up in the air somewhere, there might be an entry point where if you had, say, a particular type of toroidal, like a Stargate in the TV series, you might actually gate to a different universe right close to us, but on a different, say, matter wave or gravity wave. And I think that's why so many of the ancient reports of angels or God appearing to man in the ancient days were attended by the fact that these things came in the air first, and there was fire and clouds around them as they suddenly appeared. If you have a universe parallel to us of higher energy density, it would do that coming into a cooler universe like we are. So I don't think the distance is that great, simply because of the ancient records saying it wasn't. As I understand it, there was a war in the heavens, the layers above us, and it's being fought out in the last part of it here on the surface of the Earth, which is why these the fallen ones are here trying to get technology to make war here against the real God and creator of all this. Does that answer your question, Gary?
So you're saying the fall from grace is more universal than just human beings on this planet?
I don't know about other places. I can only address what we know here and what we're told in the writings. It's possible, I suppose, but certainly in our area, this is happening.
Stan, can I ask a question as a follow-up with that? Can you hear me, Stan?
Yeah.
Who's that?
That's Jim McKinney.
Oh, okay, Jim, yeah.
Yeah. Would you say from what you're saying that these beings then are associated or taking on human forms and then possibly associated with the leadership of the world?
Well, I think so. I think so. There might be other forms. These little gray critters, I think, may be engineered biological robots, in essence, working for them. But I think the whole plan is one of deception to gain control of the resources here on the Earth, and people are one of their resources they want to use to make this war. And so, yeah, I think that they have human form in many cases. some reports I've heard from within the group I was in said that the taller, kind of Nordic-looking ones had slightly shiny skin. It was like rainbow in the sun because it was small scales instead of skin flakes. So maybe that's where the ancient legend of serpents in the garden came from. I'm just guessing, though.
Let's take the final 3 minutes for each one of you to take a minute and just kind of give us a summary of how you feel about all these things that are going on. We'll start with you, Jim Berklin.
Well, I think it's great when we can get varying lines of evidence together, show what seems to be going on in the world. And we didn't much touch on government secrets, but it's been quite clear now that in 1979, I found that thousands of people died in the 1906 earthquake, even though the books and all the history said a few hundred. And now it's become common knowledge. I could not even publish on this for about 10 years because I was told it was too speculative, and even though I had 5 eyewitnesses and all. But, so the government kept that secret for some, 80 years. And I'm sure there are lots of other secrets out there that they're still being held closely. And I often think that the government that we see is not the government we have.
Well, you're right about that. How about you, Jim McKinney?
I just think we live in an extremely dynamic planet, both physically and politically. And it's amazing how they're coupled, and I believe a lot of political decisions are based on physical realities or possibly future realities that some people know more about than the rest of us. So the future is very dynamic, and I certainly agree with Stan when he says prepare, something, a message that I tell people, that would be the main thing. Be prepared to take care of yourself and your immediate group of people for a good period of time. That's all I can say. And once you're prepared, you can go about life as usual. It's not something to be paranoid about or worry about, but preparing for earth changes or political events or whatever is really the same. You have to take care of yourself.
You sure do. And Stan, wrap it up for us.
All right, very quickly. I agree with what James just said about preparedness. I would add to that preparedness includes getting straight with the Creator, with the good Lord. I know a lot of people are in positions where they will probably die in some of the coming earth changes and won't be able to avoid it. So it becomes tantamount then for them to be sure they've got their afterlife taken care of. That's about it.
Sure does. All right, Stan Deo, James McKinney, and you, Jim Berklin. One, thank you for being part of the roundtable discussion, but more importantly, of being just an integral part of Coast to Coast, giving us your expertise whenever events warrant it. So I appreciate all three of you coming on tonight.
Certainly my pleasure, too.
Oh, thank you, George. This was a great show.
Absolutely. The giants in the industry, when it comes to earth changes, there they are in a little cameo visit by Richard C. Hoagland as well. For Dave Caprita, Steve Carr, Dan Galanti, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesour, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. I'll see you on our next edition where we talk about some ghoulish things with the greatest storyteller ever born, Lionel Fanthorpe, on our next Coast to Coast AM. Be safe, everyone.